Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something really fundamental, electric charge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about that little spark you sometimes feel, or the way dust clings to your screen, maybe even, well, the raw power of lightning. It actually all boils down to this core concept.
It really does.
We've got some excerpts here from a physics textbook to help guide us through it.
Yep, standard stuff, but foundational.
And our mission, really, in this deep dive is just to give you a clear, hopefully engaging grasp of what electric charge is, you know, its basic rules, why it matters so much in the world around us, but without hopefully getting too bogged down in the jargon.
Sounds like a good plan.
Okay, let's jump in. Where did we even start to understand this invisible force? It feels like a story that goes way back.
It certainly does. Yeah, our sources take us back to ancient Greece, maybe around 600 BC. There was this thinker, Thales of Miletus.
Thales, right.
And he noticed something kind of curious when amber, you know, that golden fossilized resin.
Yeah.
When it was rubbed with wool, it suddenly could, like, attract light things, feathers, bits of straw.
Wow.
Think about how weird that must have seemed. Something invisible suddenly exerting a force. It really laid the groundwork for thinking about action at a distance.
Amber pulling stuff towards it.
Hmm.
That almost sounds like magic back then. So this was the very first, like, hint of what we now call electricity.
Pretty much, yeah. And it's right there in the name, actually.
Oh.
The word electricity, it comes straight from the Greek word electron.
Which means?
Amber.
No way. Electron means amber. Okay.
Yeah. For centuries, it was sort of just a curiosity, you know? But then much later, scientists started experimenting more systematically, rubbing other things together.
Right. Okay. So what other kinds of materials showed this weird ability after being rubbed?
Well, quite a few, it turns out. If you rub a glass rod with wool or maybe silk, it becomes electrified, as they called it.
Electrified, okay.
And it can attract small, light objects. Same thing happens if you rub a plastic rod, say, with fur. It also gets this attractive force.
Okay, so glass with silk, plastic with fur.
Hmm.
They attract things. Simple enough.
Ah, but here's where it gets really interesting. It's not just attraction.
Oh, go on.
Yeah, see, if you take two glass rods and you've rubbed both of them with silk.
Okay.
And then you bring them near each other. They don't attract. They actually push each other away. They repel.
Yeah, they repel.
Yep. And the same thing happens with the two pieces of silk you used to rub them. Bring those close. And they also repel each other.
Wow. Okay.
But now, if you bring one of the rubbed glass rods near the piece of silk that rubbed it.
They attract.
They definitely attract.
Yeah. So it's not just rub and attract.
Yeah.
There's pulling and pushing. And it depends on what you bring near what.
Exactly. And they saw similar stuff with the plastic rods and fur. Two rubbed plastic rods, they repel.
Okay.
A rubbed plastic rod and the fur that rubbed it, they attract.
Right.
Now get this. A rubbed plastic rod attracts a rubbed glass rod.
So the different materials, plastic and glass, they attract each other once they're rubbed.
Correct. But that rubbed plastic rod repels the silk or wool that was used on the glass rod.
Okay, wait. Plastic repels the silk.
Uh-huh. And just to complete the picture, the rubbed glass rod repels the fur that was used on the plastic rod.
Wow. Okay, that's quite a list of interactions. Seems simple, but I bet it took a ton of careful work to figure all that out.
It absolutely did. Yeah, the textbook really stresses that. These seemingly simple facts, they were the result of, you know, years and years of really meticulous experiments, careful analysis by lots of different people.
All those observations must have eventually led them somewhere significant, right? What was the big conclusion?
The big conclusion was the realization that there are really only two kinds of this thing they started calling electric charge.
Just two.
Just two. When things like glass rods, plastic rods, silk, fur get rubbed, they become electrified. They gain this electric charge. And all those experiments showed there were two distinct types of electrification, and they followed that key rule, like charges repel each other.
Glass repels glass, plastic repels plastic.
Exactly. And unlike charges, attract each other.
Glass attracts plastic, glass attracts the silk it was rubbed with.
Precisely. And this property, the thing that distinguishes these two types, they called it the polarity of charge.
Polarity. Like poles on a magnet, sort
of? Kind of analogous, yeah. It just refers to having these two distinct types, one we now call positive, the other negative, and that fundamental interaction, opposites attract, likes repel.
Okay, two kinds of charge, pulling or pushing.
Yeah.
But how did they really nail down that there were only two? Were they ever worried, like, Maybe there's a third kind hiding somewhere?
Well, that understanding firmed up with more experiments, especially looking at what happens when charged things actually, you know, touch each other. Think about taking that electrified glass rod
Okay.
and bringing it right into contact with the very piece of silk that was used to charge it up.
Ah, so touching the things that were initially rubbed together, what happens then?
Something really telling happens.
Hmm.
After they touch the glass rod and the silk, they just stop attracting each other. And neither of them attracts or repels other little things anymore, like they did right after rubbing. It's like the whole electrical effect just vanishes.
So touching them somehow cancels out the charge,
hmm.
brings them back to neutral.
Precisely. Neutralized. Yeah, this observation was a huge clue. It strongly suggested that these two different kinds of charge they got from rubbing must have some kind of opposing nature. They could nullify each other's effect. That was really pivotal.
And this is where we get the names we all know now, right? Positive and negative.
You got it. That was Benjamin Franklin, the American scientist. He's the one usually credited with assigning the names positive and negative to these two types of charge.
Okay, Ben Franklin.
And just by convention, you know, a choice they made back then, the charge you get on a glass rod when you rub it with silk, that's called positive.
Glass is positive.
Or the charge on cat's fur after rubbing plastic, also positive. Conversely, the charge on the plastic rod rubbed with fur.
That's negative.
That's negative.
Yeah.
Or the charge on the silk after rubbing the glass rod, also negative.
Right.
So when something has a net electric charge, we say it's electrified or just charged. If it has no net charge overall, it's electrically neutral.
Positive, negative, simple labels, but they capture that opposing behavior perfectly.
Mm.
Okay, so how would you even tell if something has a charge, especially if it's small? Is there some kind of charge detector?
Yes, absolutely. There's a pretty simple but actually quite clever device for just that. It's called a gold leaf electroscope.
Gold leaf. Sounds fancy.
Well, it uses gold, but it's conceptually simple. Imagine a metal rod sticking upright inside a glass jar or box, something to shield it from air currents.
Okay.
And hanging from the bottom end of this rod inside the jar are two really, really thin leaves made of gold foil. Very delicate.
Right. Thin gold leaves hanging down. So how does that detect charge?
Well, if you bring a charged object near or you touch it to a metal knob at the very top of the rod,
okay.
some of that charge will flow down the metal rod and spread onto both of those thin gold leaves.
The charge travels down the conductor.
Exactly. And now, because both leaves have received the same type of charge, either both positive or both negative, they're going to experience that repulsive force we talked about, like charges repel.
So they push each other apart.
Precisely. The repulsion makes the leaves diverge. They spread apart like an upside down V.
Okay.
And the amount they spread apart, you know, the angle between them, gives you a rough visual idea of how much charge has been transferred. More charge, wider angle.
Clever. So a bigger spread means more charge. That's a neat way to make this invisible property visible.
Okay.
Okay. So we get the two types, how they push and pull, how to spot them with an electroscope. But let's go deeper. What's actually happening? Like, at the piney scale inside the material, that makes a charge when you rub it.
Right. That takes us down to the atomic level. As you know, all matter, everything around us is made of atoms or molecules, which are groups of atoms.
Yeah.
And normally, these atoms and molecules are electrically neutral. They contain an equal amount of positive charge and negative charge, perfectly balanced.
Balanced.
But here's something really fundamental. The forces that hold everything together, you know, the bonds between molecules, what makes solid, liquid, sticky, surface tension, all of that, fundamentally, it's electrical in nature.
Whoa, wait. So, like, the stickiness of water or tape, that's electricity.
At its root, yes. It comes down to the intricate forces, the attractions and repulsions between the charged particles within those atoms and molecules.
Huh. So electricity isn't just static shocks and lightning. It's literally holding the world together.
In a very deep sense, yes. Mm. Now, to electrify something neutral, like that glass rod, we have to disrupt that perfect balance of charges.
Okay.
We either need to add extra of one kind of charge, or we need to remove some of one kind, creating a deficit. When we say something is charged, we basically mean it has this imbalance.
An imbalance of charge. Got it.
And in solid materials, typically it's the electrons, those tiny negatively charged particles orbiting the atom's nucleus, that are the mobile ones. They're the ones that can be moved around or transferred fairly easily.
Ah, so the key is moving electrons, not the positive charges.
In most everyday situations involving solids, yes, it's the electrons doing moving. The positive charges are generally locked into the atomic nuclei, which are much heavier and less mobile.
Okay, electrons are the movers.
So a body becomes positively charged when it loses some of its electrons. It's left with more positive charges in the nuclei than negative electrons orbiting.
Fewer electrons means net positive.
Right. And conversely, a body becomes negatively charged when it gains extra electrons from somewhere else. Now it has an excess of negative charge.
More electrons, net negative. Makes sense.
So think back to our glass rod rubbed with silk.
Okay. Glass gets positive, silk gets negative.
Exactly. What's actually happening during the rubbing is that some electrons are physically transferred from the atoms in the glass to the atoms in the silk fabric.
Electrons jump from glass to silk.
Right. So the glass is lead electron deficient, making it positive. The silk gains those extra electrons, making it negative.
So the charges aren't just appearing out of nowhere. They're just moving house from one material to the other.
Precisely. That's a crucial point. No new net charge is created during rubbing. It's purely a transfer, a redistribution of existing charge.
Okay.
And it's also worth noting the number of electrons that actually get transferred in these typical static electricity examples, it's usually a tiny, tiny fraction of the total number of electrons available in the material.
Just a minuscule amount changes hands. But it's enough to notice the effects. Okay, electron transfer, that makes total sense as the mechanism. Now, we've all experienced how some materials like really seem to build up static easily, while others don't. Why the difference? Metal versus plastic, for instance.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it leads us straight to the difference between conductors and insulators.
Conductors and insulators, heard those terms.
Right, so conductors are materials where electric charge, primarily those electrons we just talked about, can move around relatively freely, quite easily.
Like metals.
Metals are the classic example, yeah. Copper wires, aluminum foil. Interestingly, the human body is also a pretty decent conductor, mostly because we're full of water with dissolved salts.
Ah, that's why we can get shocks.
Exactly. Now, insulators are the opposite. They're materials that strongly resist the flow of electric charge. The electrons are more tightly bound to their atoms and can't move around easily.
Examples?
Glass, plastic, rubber, dry wood, pure water, actually. These are good insulators.
Right.
Think about the plastic coating on electrical wires.
Right, that stops the electricity from getting out, stops you from getting shocked.
Exactly. So think about rubbing a metal object, like a metal spoon, trying to build up static charge.
Yeah.
If you're holding it directly, any charge that might build up on the spoon immediately flows through your conductive body and usually dissipates into the earth, which is like a giant reservoir for charge.
So the charge leaks away instantly through me.
Pretty much. That's why it's hard to build up noticeable static on a metal object you're holding.
Good word.
But what if you had that same metal rod, but it had, say, a plastic handle?
An insulating handle.
Right. If you hold it by the plastic handle and rub the metal part without touching the metal yourself,
then the charge can build up on the metal.
Yes, because the insulating handle prevents the charge from easily escaping through your hand. The charge stays put on the metal part, at least for a while.
That makes perfect sense now. Okay. So we've got the charge types, the electron transfer, conductors letting charge move, insulators keeping it put. What about the really basic rules, the fundamental properties that charge always seems to follow?
Okay, yeah. Let's talk about some basic properties. First, a useful concept in physics is the idea of a point charge.
Point charge.
Yeah, it's basically an idealization. If you have charged objects that are really small compared to the distances between them,
okay,
you can often approximate them as if all their charge is concentrated at a single point in space. It just simplifies the math and the thinking. Like,
yeah.
Looking at stars, they're huge, but from here, they're just points of light.
Got it. Like zooming way out until the object just looks like a dot with charge.
Exactly. Now, a really crucial property is that electric charges are additive.
Additive, meaning?
Meaning if you have a system with several different charges in it, the total charge of the whole system is simply the algebraic sum of all the individual charges.
Algebraic sum. So you have to pay attention to the plus and minus signs.
Absolutely. Charge is a scalar quantity. It has magnitude, but no direction, just like mass. But unlike mass, charge can be positive or negative. So you just add them up like regular numbers, respecting their signs.
Okay, so if I had a little system with charges, say, plus 1 unit, plus 2 units, minus 3 units, plus 4 units, and many to 5 units.
Right.
The total charge would just be 1 plus 2 minus 3 plus 4 minus 5.
Exactly. Let's see. 1 plus 2 is 3 minus 3 is 0 plus 4 is 4 minus 5 is -1.
So the total charge is -1 unit.
Precisely. Simple addition, keeping track of the signs. And that's a key difference from mass, right? Mass is always positive. You only ever add mass.
Right, can't have negative mass. Okay, so charges add up algebraically. What's another big rule?
The next really fundamental one is the conservation of charge.
Conservation?
Yeah.
Like energy conservation, meaning it can't be created or destroyed.
Exactly like that. We actually touched on this already with the rubbing example. Remember, when the glass rod became positive, the silk became equally negative.
Right. Electrons moved from one to the other.
Yeah. The total amount of charge didn't change. It was just redistributed.
Yeah.
One object gained a certain amount of negative charge. The other lost the exact same amount, which is equivalent to gaining positive charge. No net charge was created or destroyed in that whole process.
Okay.
And this isn't just for rubbing. It's considered a fundamental law of nature, verified by countless experiments within any isolated system, meaning one that doesn't exchange matter or charge with its surroundings, the total electric charge always remains constant.
Always constant in a closed box, basically.
Yeah.
Charges can move around inside, interact, swap partners, but the grand total, positive minus negative, stays the same.
That's the core idea. Even in more exotic physics, like high-energy particle collisions where new charged particles might actually be created, they are always created in pairs with equal and opposite charges. For example, if an electron negative is created, a positron, its antiparticle with positive charge, is also created simultaneously. So the net change in charge is still zero.
Wow. So even when creating matter, you have to create opposite charges together to keep the books balanced.
That's right. Same if charged particles are destroyed, they annihilate in pairs, keeping the net charge constant. You simply cannot create or destroy net charge in an isolated system. It's a bedrock principle.
Wow. Okay. So from watching Amber pick up fluff all the way to this deep universal law of charge conservation, that's quite a journey of discovery.
It really is, isn't it? We've covered a lot of ground here in this deep dive. We started way back with those first historical glimpses, Thales and Amber.
Right, and then all those rubbing experiments leading to attraction and repulsion.
And that key insight. There are just two kinds of charge, positive and negative, and opposites attract, likes repel.
Then we looked at how you can actually detect charge with that neat gold leaf electroscope.
And then dug into the atomic picture, how charging is really about moving tiny electrons around.
Creating that imbalance.
Yeah.
And how that leads to the difference between conductors, where charge flows easily.
And insulators, where it pretty much stays put.
And finally, those fundamental rules.
Mm-hmm.
Charge adds up simply, but with signs. And crucially, charge is always conserved. The total amount never changes in a closed system.
Exactly. So now hopefully when you feel that zap from a doorknob or see static cling making your hair stand on end or even watch a thunderstorm,
yeah,
you'll maybe see them a bit differently. You'll recognize them as, just macroscopic examples of these really fundamental principles of electric charge doing their thing.
It definitely gives you a new appreciation for those everyday things, knowing the physics underneath. It makes you wonder, though. Consider you said even the forces holding matter together are electrical.
Mm-hmm.
What other things in the universe, things that seem totally unrelated, might actually be connected through these basic ideas of charge? And are there still big mysteries about charge itself? Like, why does it come in positive and negative? Why is it conserved? It feels like there's still so much more underneath.
Absolutely. Those are deep questions. And while we understand the rules incredibly well, the why behind some of them still touches on the very frontiers of physics. We've definitely peeled back a layer, but there's always more to explore.